Good morning, everybody. Welcome to episode 8 of the Doccast. As always, I'm joined by my fellow host, Matthew. Morning, Matthew.
Good morning, Craig.
How are you doing? You all right?
Very well. Yourself?
Not bad, mate. Good man. Not bad. Welcome, everybody. As we said, hope all is well. Just wanted to mention, if you've not already, we had a fantastic podcast last time out with a very special guest. The director of Pure Vans, who did give us a great insight into what it's like to run an LCV business. If you've not listened to that, please do have a look on Spotify. We've got some further good news as well. We've got a fantastic special guest coming up very, very soon. We're going to deep dive into the auction element of our industry, so please do keep a lookout for that. Today's episode is very much me and Matt giving an update on what's going on in the business, some news, predictions, what's been happening. Matt, what's going on with some latest news? What's the headlines?
Craig, I know you love to talk around the likes of Tesla and their developments. So I think the recent news, as we've discussed off air, around the Cybertruck is is no more than relevant right now, right?
For the listeners that may have been under a rock and not aware of the Tesla Cybertruck, it's been in the making for a very, very long time, right? It looks... What do you think of it? What do you think of the look? Because it's Marmite, isn't it?
It is. It is a bit out there, but isn't that the modern day? As it evolves in that... I'm not sure the shape of the Cybertruck myself, but again, it is absolutely Marmite in that approach, and there'll be method to the madness from Mr. Musk, I'm sure.
It reminds me of something that I would have built out of Lego when I was 10 years old. That boxy looking shape, right? But I actually think it's going to do really, really well with it. Tesla are now producing them. They're in production, aren't they? In the Gigafactory, I think in Texas maybe is where they're doing it. There's spy shots of it out the back, covered up, ready for delivery. So it's quite hard to come across a production-ready look of it. But, I mean, you know, again, right, Tesla are just going to hit it out of the park, I think, with this.
Yeah, I think so. And it seems affordable, subject to the model type. I think from a US dollar perspective, I think it ranges from circa $39,000 up to the top end of the range of around $50,000. Yeah. So it's relatively affordable en masse in that regards, but
yeah.
More interesting to the point is around the there's already a bank order of 1.5 million orders. So, you know, just catching up around the whole Cybertruck story is that if anyone is to order now off the back of the
good luck.
There's a 5-year wait list.
It's mad, isn't it?
5-year wait list. So yeah. Yes.
Is that on current production run? Are they going to
up that?
That
is global, based on current global order bank.
Because if you think about the Model 3, they really upped the production line, didn't they? Mm-hmm. To a point in which that they sped up a lot faster than originally planned on it. And it'd be interesting to see whether or not they do the same for this. But I mean, listen, if it can do, as what's mentioned, 500 miles on a charge... I mean, they're absolutely ridiculous, because the next interesting thing to talk about, what I come across, and I've been keeping a bit of an eye on, is the new Volkswagen ID.7. Seen that?
Yeah, well, yeah, just doing a little bit of research around that following our conversation, but it's out there to pretty much rival the Tesla Model 3, from my understanding, and the BMW i4.
Maybe like the Model Y, maybe more.
More so, from a shape perspective and a size perspective. But again, if you from my, it's always been like a, you know, and we've joked on historical podcasts that the sort of range envy. Range anxiety, I should say, but it seems to have been
range envy will be in a few years.
Yes, anxiety true. Is the word there. But yeah, again, the ID.7, the Pro version, 435 mile range.
Yeah, I mean, if it can do that, that'll be an absolute game changer.
That's Edinburgh to London, right?
Yeah,
covered.
Yeah, massively. And I think what's interesting as well, like, it looks good. The inside looks really, really good as well. And I just think, you know, we've talked about two vehicles here that are coming out that are now 400, 500 mile estimated range. Now, we know it's a bit less in real life. For anyone who has driven an electric car, it is never what it says. It must be done in absolute perfect conditions. But I think, are we now seeing that tipping point of above 400 maybe coming in as those new regular vehicles? And is that going to change people's views on electric vehicles? Now, we could have a whole other bloody podcast about, you know, the charging infrastructure and all that lot. But actually, we're getting to a point now with the batteries. I think that anxiety is a bit less of a worry when it comes to, am I going to be able to get where I need to get to, right?
Couldn't agree more with that statement. Absolutely.
Matt, I understand you've got some interesting stats on used electric, which is, I think, from what you showed me when we went into this recording, quite an eye-opener, right?
Yeah, it's just to give some context for the used EV market, I guess, and that stock that's typically 0 to 5 year old, as it would be, obviously, in the used EV space. So it just equates to just 8% of the market.
Yeah.
Theoretically, which is, you know, some may deem that where they'd expect it to be. But interestingly, to our earlier discussion, that the prices, we talk about the impact of government almost forcing the arm, but
yeah,
it's affordability. So prices are down as well, 18% year on year.
Mm-hmm. And we know the reasons why. We spoke about them earlier, right?
Absolutely, but it's also as well as the influx of the Chinese, you know, entering the UK market as well. So there's more choice to consumer that drives down prices in that regard. But interestingly as well, we talk around growth trajectories and anticipated growth throughout as an outlook for this year. But interestingly, the average days to sell of a petrol and diesel used vehicle in recent months has just been 27 days.
It's low, isn't it?
Which is low. However, for EV, that's only 38 days.
Mm.
So, okay, say only, it's 11 days longer. But that's still, if you think about consumer confidence where it's been, that's still relatively quick in terms of that speed of sale.
And positive.
And it is positive. And we talked earlier around that stabilization of, you know, EV valuations in the marketplace, increase in dealer and consumer confidence. Could we see that those days tumbling in line with the petrol and diesel assets as we move through?
That will be an interesting tipping point.
Absolutely.
That will be, if they are moving as fast as what, you know, your normal petrol vehicles would be coming in and out of the marketplace. I suppose it's consumer confidence, it's pricing. Pricing's a big one, isn't it? Because like for like, petrol are cheaper.
Yeah, of course.
You know, normally.
Absolutely.
But yeah, again, it's those trends that we're seeing. We can only look at forecasts of what we believe is going to happen off the back of what's happened recently. But again, you know, is it going to be a move across to electric for as many people as possible before that 2030.
Yeah, absolutely. And linking that back then into that 0 to 5 year old outlook from an EV perspective, alluded to that its market share, but by 2026, that market share 0 to 5 year old EV will be 36% is a forecasted outlook. So,
you know,
that's quadrupling.
That's on 2026.
That's due to quadruple over the next 3 years. And to the points around that, they from an independent used retailer, potentially new as well, of course, is that only 16% of dealer partners stock EVs. So again,
they're scared of it.
Absolutely, but
we spoke to so many that are scared of it, right? The prices, the fact that they feel they may sit on their forecourt, even though we've just said that those average days to sell are at 38.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, again, it's an interesting part of the market for sure. And the stats are backing up that it's positive. That's the important thing, right?
100%.
Another super brilliant car that I've seen, the new Mustang. Now, I do love Mustangs, but the new GTD is a $300,000 street legal vehicle that is coming out from Mustang as a bit of a celebration. Have you seen it?
I haven't.
For anyone who's listening, please do Google it. It's got 800 horsepower, $300,000, but absolutely incredible.
$300,000. Wow.
Right, let's move into a little bit of kind of what's been going on in the marketplace. So obviously SMMT released some data just recently. Some interesting points around Q2 23. Let's tackle used car market first. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, growth, you know, growth is always positive. You know, looking at that circa in the used car market, a 4.1% growth in Q2, equating to nigh on 1.8 million transactions,
yeah.
Which is great to see. It's a growth. And just to context that to last year, you know, it's kind of up circa 72,500 more units. So
yeah.
It's that progressive growth. And what we do tend to find SMMT and what we always tend to do is reference back to pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
2019, admittedly, we're still circa 10% behind on that from a comparison perspective. In 2019, we're 234,000 units down on pre-pandemic. But that said, it's still positive. We're seeing that trajectory of growth as we kind of progress through.
Two things I think in that. The first thing I think of is the country, the UK, as an economy in Q2, say for instance, and mm-hmm. what was happening in our country. It felt like there was so much in the news, cost of living, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, used is slightly different. Used does need to change hands. People need to change hands to get to work. You know, their car's broken, something like that. But this is a growth, which is interesting, which says to me people may also be changing vehicles because they want to change them, which is really, really interesting. You know, it doesn't stop the consumer from wanting to make a switch outright, but it could be the fact that they were maybe moving down to smaller vehicles. You know, is that an option for people now, having to move to those cheaper vehicles, more economical?
Yeah, absolutely. And also to add to that, the supply constraint is now easing. We
yeah.
kind of know that en masse,
yeah.
right? So the production levels are returning to a relative norm.
Yeah.
So, you know, from a supplies perspective, so we're seeing that aid in the increase in availability and registration from that perspective.
Yeah, but interestingly, the used car prices are still high. They are still high versus, I know we talked to pre-pandemic, we have talked to and we do around supply, but actually prices are only really, really, I mean, they're coming down small amounts now, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's still, and we've talked to this number of times, and you know, but it's that lack of supply, that the loss of the 2.5 million new vehicles weren't created, still will have a lasting impact for years to come. Through to, we look at the car park, the cohort of the car park, and we kind of see that, don't we, as it
yeah.
playing out. We're not seeing, you know, they will remain high, undoubtedly. And obviously it will vary from, you know, asset type and make models in that regard from that, you know, when we get into some of the fuel types, that's relevant to that. If you
yeah.
think of like the petrol, in that regard, via diesel as an example. But yeah, they remain strong, and that should give, you know, dealer partners reassurance in that space.
We talk a lot about what happened pre-pandemic. We do a lot,
mm-hmm.
see it a lot in reports.
Yep.
We've been out of the pandemic now for a while. It feels like we've been out for a while and kind of getting on now. We do a lot of comparisons, but that comparison that we had pre-pandemic, Were we just in an incredible position? Was the economy just in an amazing position? We didn't know how good we had it. And we'll probably look back at that and go, we didn't know how amazing that time was. For everything, really, before it all just went absolutely crazy. And are we ever gonna reach that again? Are we gonna get to those levels?
Well, we all know it goes in cycles, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's the process of the economy. But if you think of pre-pandemic Bank of England base rate, pre-pandemic, what was it?
God knows.
0.25?
Yeah, just ridiculously low.
And we've seen 10 plus rises. So, of course, there's the macro factors that affect that in our industry and in every industry.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a valid point. Pre-pandemic, were we in a exponential position back then? Of course,
just
we were.
In like a crazy bubble, right? But you know, we touched a little bit on electric when we spoke about some of the vehicles that are coming out. But actually, SMMT released data to say that the BEV sales in July soared 81.8%, and that's now got a market share of 1.7%. Now, this isn't new, remember, this is used.
Mm-hmm.
And in the used market for battery vehicles, we know that prices have been all over the place. We spoke to a number of retailers that are scared of this. But sales are happening, and all of a sudden you've seen a massive jump now in this, right?
Yeah, but I think to that point around pricing, there was uncertainty. But I think it's fair to say in recent months, the prices have stabilised.
Yeah.
More so. That is bound to give not only dealer confidence, but consumer confidence.
Yeah.
You know, we know they are depreciating assets in the main, but you know, that's not going to be a sudden drop off, if you like, in that process. It's just a usual decrease in valuation. So yeah, that gives both stabilization in the used EV market.
Yeah.
Gives both partners and consumer confidence.
I think to give some context as well, the reason why those used battery prices just went, you know, haywire down really was the fact that, you know, the new prices, especially Tesla, were dropped drastically, which had then an effect on those used ones. And then all of a sudden it just went a bit crazy. Now, as you mentioned, yes, they have stabilized a bit now, which is good news. But I think, you know, we are in 2023 now. We know that we've got the 2030 deadline with the UK government, you know, still in plan.
Absolutely.
We've spoke loads of times and spoke to loads of people about it, different viewpoints on it. But it is still there, and I think, you know, people are understanding it. And obviously, for anyone who's not, you know, seen it, but you probably have, the new ULEZ zone.
Absolutely.
What's your thoughts on Mr. Khan's plans?
Well, you know, that will undoubtedly affect consumers' thought process and behaviours around how they react to that, right? And you think about the expansion of the ULEZ zones, you think about the implementation of scrappage scheme across all asset types as well.
Yeah, so let's talk about that scrappage scheme. So for someone who's living, the new ULEZ zone basically now goes out to the North Circular and the South Circular. You're almost thinking about the M25 as a whole now, or just under. There's a hell of a lot of people that live in those outer zones that don't drive a compliant vehicle. And the uproar was, it was forced upon that the ULEZ plan was going to go ahead. And if you have not got a compliant vehicle, that you will be charged £12.50 per day to drive it in these zones. So there was an uproar, and they finally decided to put a scrappage scheme in for the people that had a non-compliant vehicle residence in these areas to give them £2,000. Now, we know that last scrappage scheme was crazy, but actually this one is a designated one for this. What, you know, what's your thoughts? What would you do if you're living in one of those areas?
Well, you know, the boundary expansion takes effect from the 29th of August, of
yeah,
course.
Yeah, not too far from now.
Yeah, you know, literally in 6 days' time. So, you know, that scrappage scheme, I think, you know, it's been applicable to all asset types. That's been invaluable. There's been the considerations that they get this £2,000 maximum for cars, which is positive. From a van perspective, it's £7,000, which is significant. You know, even for small businesses. So, you know, I'm just thinking of consumer in Africa, I think about businesses impact and, you know, the ability to have a fleet of vans, for example. Yeah. So that, you know, they can have up to three vans for their business. So I think there's been more consideration around that. That will drive conversion.
You think of all the courier vans that cover those areas that are non-compliant currently. Thousands and thousands of vehicles that have all of a sudden got to make a fast decision, get this sorted out quick before they start getting charged £12.50 a day.
Exactly that.
You know, and this is one, you know, London have done the ULEZ zones. We're seeing clean air zones happening more and more around the country. For London to do it, I suppose it's got to be that starting point, hasn't it? But I think if you're the everyday kind of person that's living in those outer areas that has got a non-compliant vehicle, you are being forced now. You have no choice.
Exactly.
Unless you want to pay this charge. You have to go out, you have to try and find another vehicle, you have to spend money. Yeah, you get £2,000. I get that. But I also read a report that said that there's going to be all of these vehicles that actually are okay, that are going to be going through the scrappage scheme, like the last one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Could be a bit of a shame in some instances, but we'll see what happens. I don't think that's the end of this at the minute.
No, and naturally, you know, we're talking around London, but think about other cities where it's been implemented recently, you know, and that will expand out over time, right? So it's almost...
Has Birmingham got one yet?
It has. I think, don't quote me on the date, but it's similarly with Bristol, then it's the expansion, there's Bath, you know, it continue expanding. So almost the government force in the hand of the consumer.
Yeah, we want to do these rules, you have to pay it.
Exactly
we
that.
Look good,
so,
right?
And that, you know, that contributes to the growth in the EV that we're seeing naturally. And when we break that down and analyse that regionally, naturally we're seeing that currently within the London and the boroughs of London as well.
So just to recap then, so we know in July, BEV sales soared 81.8%. Imagine what that's going to look like in August or September.
Yeah. And
just in those areas, by the way.
Of course, yeah, break down by area. Just for context, I know you alluded to the 1.7% market share, but for the listeners, from a transactional perspective, that's 30,000, just in excess of 30,000. So,
yeah.
You know, still relatively small on the grand scheme of things in that regard. But to your point, with the implementation of London...
The ULEZ zone, I read that it said there was roughly around about 200,000 vehicles registered in this new zone. That obviously, not all of those are going to need to be changed.
Sure.
But there'll be a big percentage of those that are changed. So yeah, that data around used electric vehicles for August, September... for those areas are going to be really big. We'll try and get hold of those for the next episode. What's going on in the new car market currently?
Petrol continue to rise.
Yeah.
Year to date, I think there's an increase of circa 13.2%, equating to 42% market share. But interesting, again, we were discussing this offline, BEV is now the second biggest fuel type.
Yes.
You know, you wouldn't be expecting that, but again, 16.1% of the market share.
Yeah, so fully electric has jumped above mild hybrid, just to give you some context. So it's petrol first now as a market share of 41%, then you've got fully battery at 16.1% and then mild hybrid at 15.1%. So that movement is significant, I think, and it's just a really, really interesting, pattern of what consumers are now purchasing, right? Quite early doors as well when you think about 2023.
Yep, absolutely it is. But again, we know that will continue to rise, and perhaps, you know, to the points we've discussed so far, probably rise more rapidly now with supply ease, government impact on, you know,
the
ULEZ zones, etc., yeah. expanding across the UK. You know, and you know, other elements, and you know, from a taxation perspective, you know, we all also know that the rise in that area as well. So
yes,
there's other influencing factors that we'll see in a continual increase in that EV space as we progress through Q3 of this year and beyond.
Yeah, so Q2 23 sales jumped from, well, sales were 144,000 for new. If you compare that to the year previously, for July it was 110,000. So, you know, it's gone up 34,000 year on year, July to July, for the Q2. Really, really interesting point. Again, positive, super positive, because it there's a big bit of growth in there, right? The forecast still sits at for 23 to 1.8 million sales, which is up. This is, again, a forecast, right? But it's looking positive. That'll be up 14% versus 22. So again, we're in that good space again, right? Vehicles are being made, they're flushing through the system, you know, and they will then become used, right?
Absolutely. And given an outlook from a battery electric vehicle, from an SMMT outlook perspective, that's expected to rise to circa 23.4% for the remainder of this year.
Yeah.
So again, to the point we're talking around, again, growing that market share to 17.8% is the outlook. So, you know, quite exponential growth planned or forecasted, I should say, for the remainder of this year.
I still can't get my head around, we're in the future, 2030, all of those new vehicle sales, the car sales, will be 100%. 100%. That's what the government's aiming for.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Like, and I think, you know, we've attended many meetings, hosted many meetings where quite often we've seen a show of hands where, you know, the perception is that it'll be extended by the government.
I know.
But actually, you know, that they're sitting firm. And
is there any signs that
2030 is going to happen?
Yeah.
And some of the impact, like the ULEZ, you know, is forcing and will rise that transition for consumers. So, you know, infrastructure, we're still seeing, you know, the rapid expansion of, you know, the charging points across the UK, even in more rural areas now.
You got one in your house yet?
I know we've joked historically around, like, in the likes of West Wales, but there's charging points in the most rural of West Wales points as well. Now,
from your house, where's the nearest set of chargers? Do you know? Do you have any like a local Tesco's or any supermarkets?
It's literally at the local Tesco is not even a mile. We're not that far behind you in England. It's literally half a mile away.
And that's got a load of chargers in it.
There's four chargers at the local Tesco's in that regard. But that, you know, and we're seeing that expansion all the time across supermarkets, across various locations. So rapid expansion of charging
points.
And
also with any new houses that are being built now, the law states that it needs to have a charger, right?
Absolutely. I think that's specific to England. And I think I read an article where that was confirmed, I believe, with Redrow. They did one exclusively with one of their chargers. Obviously that's a given that's been implemented as well.
Yeah, no, you know, we'll see where that BEV goes versus petrol. Obviously petrol's still at 41%, which is strong. The Fiesta's gone.
Wow. That cuts that, this, Craig. That cuts.
Have you owned a Fiesta in your lifetime?
My nephew has. And yeah, reliable.
Oh man, I'm gutted. I've owned
it's like part of the family.
I've owned two Fiestas in my lifetime. First one was a 1.2, absolute rockety old thing. I mean, it was falling apart. A few years later, I must have been about 21, 22, I got a Fiesta ST.
Oof.
This thing was mint. At the time, I used to love it. Silver. Had all the trimmings on it, the nice multi-spoke wheels on it, was a brilliant, brilliant vehicle. Anyway, we know that the Fiesta has been a stable part of the UK roads for a very, very long time, and Ford have decided it is no longer.
Yes.
And it is sad, but obviously they're going down a very, very different route. Now, if we look at best sellers, as we're talking about new vehicles, what's replaced it? What's the top selling vehicle now? Puma.
So
the Puma has now gone straight to the top of the list.
Absolutely.
So Ford still own that. I do feel sad. And the Pumas, don't get me wrong, some of the newer ones do look good. But, you know, you've then got Kia Sportage behind it. You've got the Qashqai behind that. But I just feel really sad for the Fiesta.
I agree, but it's not forgotten about. If we talk around, it's still the most sold, transacted, used asset. And I'm also caveat that with it's also the most financed asset.
Yes.
From certainly from a Close Brothers perspective. So it's still got some life in the legs. Appreciate it's not no longer in production, but it's still going to be around for some time. But absolutely, as you alluded to, the Ford, the Puma has pretty much taken its place in
in
the market.
So no, I mean, new car is looking good. You know, positive. We know the trends are looking good. That's all. It's all great for us to see. What's going on in the LCV market? What's your thoughts on that?
Significant growth. Looking at July as the last complete month as a whole, and with that year-on-year comparison, 44.1% growth.
Massive, isn't it?
Year-on-year.
Yeah.
So that is significant. The outlook is for 328,000 units for the whole of the 2023, which is an indication of a forecasted 16.1% growth on the prior year. So,
which is super light.
Which is...
That's massive, isn't it?
Very strong. We're seeing, well, it's not reportable, we're seeing that also through conversations with partners.
Yeah.
That's playing out in the used market as well. It's a very buoyant marketplace.
So I know earlier on we said, you know, pre-pandemic or versus, we're putting it against the period. So if we're saying that prediction for 23 is at 328,000 units, I was looking at when we peaked in the UK, and it was in the summer of 21.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 370,000
right
year on year in the summer 21 versus 20. Now obviously there was lockdown pre-pandemic stuff in there. We're heading more back towards those levels, which is great news. But what's super, super interesting is the actual type of vehicle, as in what it runs on, electric, hybrid, etc. LCV's had a surge. It's had a surge. 16.1% year on year up. Is that a hand being forced? What's your thoughts?
Well, again, from the points we've just spoken about.
Yeah.
It's
not out of the want of.
No, it is partly the hand, but it's all the other elements that play into that. The BEV share of the LCV market expected to be at 7.1% for 2023.
Yeah.
At 23,000 units. After a 39% volume rise. So, yeah, it's a combination of factors, as we've already sort of touched on. And interestingly, when you do that comparison with BEV in car v. BEV
LCV,
there's further exponential growth in the LCV relative to numbers, of course, in that regard. So
yeah, percentage wise, right?
Yeah, with a rise expected of 24-57%. So it's that transition. You know, you and I have hosted a number of meetings where, you know, we've joked around the range anxiety. I mean, you know, dealer partners saying they've been unable to get them from auction back to their depot as a joking comment. But again, the expansion of that hopefully will, you know, play out and will contribute to that growth.
It's a valid point though, right? We spoke earlier on and I said about that tipping point of 400 miles on a range of a vehicle, on a car.
Yeah.
You know, that gives that kind of like, oh, okay, I can get, you know, I can do a good journey on this. The vans, just nowhere near that, right? Absolutely the other end of the spectrum. And that's what needs to be sorted out big time for this to, for it to land well. It's a must.
Absolutely,
it's got to be there on it.
And I think the maximum range on a BEV for LCV, I think it's 198 miles, I believe, is the maximum range.
And that's one passenger in perfect conditions with nothing in the back.
Yeah, you're talking of payloads then. Yeah, the impact that has, right?
So Yeah. Oh, it's a tough one. But talking on those new LCV, we see more and more now, and we've spoke about this previously, transits, customs especially, they're great, you know, they're good looking now, they're like lifestyle vehicles now, right? They've got the body kits, the nice wheels, all the bits and bobs inside.
They're kind of on trend, right?
Proper on trend. I mean, I've seen some nice purple ones out there, I've seen people, you know, getting them wrapped. These are their work vans, by the way.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Sparkies and stuff like that, but they look the part now.
They do.
But what's super, super interesting is the normal Ford Transit in July sold 2,598. Yeah, just a good old-fashioned Transit. The Transit Custom sold 2,594. So we are talking four vehicles different in sales now between the original old-school Transit and the Transit Custom for July. That shows where these consumers, where these buyers want, what do they feel about these vans?
Absolutely.
I think that's an incredible point. And is it going to overtake it now? Is the Custom now going to be the number one Transit?
The trends would indicate that, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It's just a super interesting one. And again, we'll see. Transit has owned this space for a long, long time. Actually, when you think about where they've got ahead, they've got to go around alternative fuel. They're nowhere near where they need to be. Could someone else come into this industry, into LCV New, with a vehicle that could do good mileage, good range, that could knock all of these big players off the top? We know what's going on in China at the minute. You know, those manufacturers coming over. That is a space. That is a space where if someone come in that could do 400 miles... for an LCV Transit style van at an affordable price, I think we've just come across a gap in the market, haven't we?
What are we creating?
So yeah, interesting area, I think, for the LCV market for sure. Right, well, that's it from us today. Hope you enjoyed this episode. As I mentioned, our next episode that we release is a auction special, so please do tune in on that one. But for now, Matt, thank you for your time today. Always a pleasure.
Thanks as always.
And we will see you all soon. Thanks.